Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. Welcome to the TOC's Open Forum Introduction to the Racing Offense. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. We will conduct a question and answer session at the end of the presentation. When that time comes, participants will be asked to press star 3 on their phone to register for a question. As a reminder, this seminar is being recorded and will be available to review on our website, toconline.com, in the next few days. It is now my pleasure to introduce TOC's President and CEO, Greg Avioli.
Thank you, Elizabeth, and good morning, everybody. We very much appreciate everyone joining us today. We are honored to have as our guests the racing secretaries from Santa Anita and Del Mar, Rick Hammerly and David Jerkins. One of the primary functions of the TOC is to interact on behalf of all the owners in California with the racing offices. And we're going to talk a little bit today about how we do that interaction and a lot of issues that come up on a day-to-day basis that we think most of our owners probably don't know all the details of. So we want to hopefully educate you a little bit of how all this works and give you a chance to ask questions directly to Rick and David. Thank you again for joining.
Thank you, Greg. I'm Elizabeth Morey. I'm your TOC Director of Racing, and I'll be moderating with Rick and David today. And our objective with this seminar is to give new owners an overview of how the racing office works, veteran owners new insight into how complicated the job of racing secretary can be, and to give all owners a better understanding of how the TOC and the racing office work together, as Greg said. So most people would say that the most basic job of the racing secretary is to fill races with as full of fields as possible. David, could you talk a little bit about why full fields are so important, not just to the racetrack, but also to the owners?
Sure. One thing about the purse account is revenue to the purse account comes from wagering only. Unlike other tracks in the country, there's no subsidies from gambling that supports our purses. What we generate is what we can pay out. So if we run many small fields and wagering handle goes down, well, that could impact purses to owners where purses would go down. So what we're trying to do is offer as many competitive races as we can, a balanced program, understanding that it's an industry-wide issue of small fields. We're all trying to fight for a small population of horses, a shrinking fall crop. So you're just trying to, again, understand that there are going to be some small fields, but overall, you're trying to offer as many quality races with full fields, which ultimately impact our handle and the purses that we could pay out.
Absolutely. So if you can get those full fields, then we have got more purse money, and more purse money often leads to fuller fields. So if you can get things going the right direction, it helps everybody out.
Right, but I just want to also mention that in certain categories of races, we want to give owners opportunities for higher stakes races, higher allowance races. So that's why you may see on a particular card a 5 or 6 horse field of 2 other than allowance horses or 3 other than allowance horses. And we understand that, you know, those horses need a spot to run. And hopefully with a balanced program, you have fuller fields that support those particular races.
Absolutely. And I think that's especially important at a very long meet at Santa Anita. You have to manage the entire horse population. So, Rick, could you talk a little bit about what David just mentioned about how you manage making sure there's opportunities for all horses, even if you have to use a short field here or there?
Sure. Thanks. And welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining. Taking what David said, very important, especially in a longer meet, meaning not every race is going to have 10 or 12 horses, and that's just because certain categories are fuller than others. And a little different, same concept, but a little bit different in a longer meet. In a shorter meet, you kind of hit and run. Maybe they have 1 or 2 times to run and out. In a longer meet, we try to have a little bit of a long-term plan for categories that will eventually lead to some smaller stakes and then to some bigger stakes. So obviously when you have the maiden races, you know, we run at the beginning of the year. So our job, and it's in one sense, is to break as many maidens as possible. So, you know, three-year-olds are starting, two-year-olds are turning three. It's that time of year. So we'll try and pound out as many of those races as possible. And obviously, the more maiden races we make, the more allowance races we can make for those type of horses too. And as David mentioned, sometimes those races are smaller than others, and that's just because of that time and that particular category. That's it. But those races need to go. It's one of the things we'll use that race with five. But yes, we did. Very rarely will you see us use a lower, like a maiden 20 or maiden 30 with five, because there's more in that category. We won't settle for that in that category. So in the longer meet with a certain amount of purse money to work with, as David said, we're the only, California is basically the only major racing, or the only racing in general, that does not get an extra paycheck every week, meaning we don't have slots, we don't have casinos, we don't have anything else. So we really run a true model. The money that we take in, that's from the handle, is what the percentage goes, is what goes out in purses. So we really do have to manage that. And by doing that, we kind of figure out a system where we run, you know, X amount of smaller purse races mixed in with some medium-type purse races, and then the stakes. So at the end of the week, at the end of the month, at the end of the meet, that all has to balance out so we're not paying more money than we bring in. So, you know, there's a lot of thought that goes into what we do, and we're here to kind of share some of the thoughts that we take into when we write our races. Sometimes it's like, well, how come you put that race there? Usually there's a plan. That race is there because, you know, there's a stake in 5 weeks or something, and we need to do that. So we do different things for different reasons. And you know, and that's why we're glad to have you guys here to ask some questions. Hopefully, we can answer why we do certain things.
Thanks, Rick. With the increased popularity of multi-race wagers like the Pick Six, the racing secretaries are increasingly responsible for putting together a race card that the public wants to bet, and maybe even a race card that they think might lead to a carryover. David, could you talk a little bit about how you look at a race card when you're drawing races for the day and what you do to try to make it as interesting as possible to bettors?
Sure. Once we get everything collected together in the racing office and we know how many horses are in each particular race, we separate which races look more appealing to wager on, which we try to put those particular races in the Pick Six. We're looking at the late Pick Four. There's other factors that get into it. You want to have a feature race. So usually at Del Mar, you know, for the summer meet especially, we offer stakes races pretty much every day. So we like to have our feature race late in the card. You're separating turf races as well. So you don't want to have back-to-back turf races, obviously. But mostly what you're looking at throughout the morning is how competitive the races are as they're filling. And again, just looking at it from a horse player's standpoint, just trying to get the most competitive races you can later in the card. A lot of times you'll see cards in California all over where the smaller fields are usually in the early portion of the card. So once the East Coast signals end, more money is wagered in California. So we kind of definitely gear towards the Pick Six to offer our best quality.
And, you know, I think the biggest bet that we have, obviously, the pick 10 years ago, Pick Six, that was it. We really balanced our whole card around the Pick Six, looking for the carryover, doing, you know, that was it. Slowly, the Pick Six has gotten a little bit out of favor. We've had the Pick Four. I think the Pick Four is the biggest single-handling bet in the country that we offer here in California, our late Pick Four. So now, you know, obviously, I've been thinking about the Pick Six. Now we've added a late Pick Five here at Santa Anita. So it really kind of throws your mind in a tizzy. And as David, I'm sure, will attest, sometimes you overthink it. And do you put the four or five toughest races there, toughest by meaning handicapping, or do you we think about, do you throw an easy race in there so if they, you know, the better gets a sort of a free spot? Does that make the handle go up? So, like Dave said, there's so many things that go into it, especially the turf. We like to give at least one race, sometimes two, between our turf races to give the guys go out there and, you know, tamp it down and fix it. And once again, we're one of the few major states that has a normal-sized turf course, 70, 80 feet wide. You look at, Gulfstream and Arlington, and New York has, two courses. So when they are able to card, four, five, and six turf races a day, it's great because they're running all over the place, different distances away from the rail. We traditionally have one rail set for the day, so we can't run four or five in the same spot. We have to keep moving the rail to keep the ground safe. So you can't run turf races back to back. You try and, like Dave said, put a feature in. Now that we have the early pick five has been a bonanza. I'll try and, if I can, throw a couple of bigger fields early to get maybe some interest early in the cards around. So, and every day is different. If it's a Thursday, you might do something different than you would do on the weekend on a Saturday. So, a lot of thought goes in when you're setting that race card, I'll tell you.
And like Rick said, the key is sometimes you overthink these things. You think there's a 1-5 shot that, can't get beat. That horse ultimately ends up scratching sometimes. I mean, there's just so many factors beyond your control. But you're doing the best you can throughout the morning of just looking at the card and seeing how competitive the races are. And like Rick mentioned, definitely that late pick four has been quite a big wager now in California. So you're focusing on that for sure.
Thanks, David. Let's talk a little bit about the condition book. For anyone on the line that doesn't know, the races that you guys are hoping to take entries for are published usually 2 to 3 weeks in advance in the condition book that you see most every jockey's agent and trainer walking around with every day. Rick, can you explain the difference between races that are in the condition book or substitutes or extra races that owners might be planning their horses for?
Sure. Every 2 or 3 weeks, depending on how the calendar falls, we'll put out a book, and in that book, has races for those race days. In my head, just kind of thinking, within two books, there should be a race for just about every horse on the backside. So, you can't squeeze them all in one book, but like I said, in a couple books, there should be something for everybody. And, our horse population is not huge. So when you traditionally look at books that David and I write, we have our own style that we do it. But traditionally, you don't see a whole lot of sub-races in books that we have here. When you look at, if you get a chance to pick up a book from, Maryland or Florida or other places, they might have 8 races in the book and then 6 or 7 subs in the same book from the same day. We don't have that luxury because we don't have the horses. So the races that are in our book better be pretty good, meaning go most of the time because we only have a few subs. And then there's some extras on the overnight. And I'm going to say most of the extras, 90% of the extras that you see on the overnight are races that were in the book that we've carried over. Once in a while, someone will ask for an extra, and if it fits, we'll put it up there. But in my head, obviously, when we start taking entries in the morning, as the entries come up and we start looking what races have what, we try and do the races in the book, but if it's an extra or it's a sub and it's a good race and it's timely and it might need to go, that race is going. If the race in the book only has 4 or 5 or something, guess what? We're going to use the extra. We're going to use the sub. And it's hard to explain, but every day is different. If we're drawing for a Thursday, we might use a race with a 5-horse field that we would never use on a Saturday, just because Thursdays are Thursdays, and we'd rather run the smaller fields maybe on a Thursday and in turn save a bigger race for Saturday. So the same scenario might come up for 2 different days, and we do 2 different things. What will happen sometimes, we have 3 or 4 turf races in the book, they all go, and guess what? There's a turf extra with 20. Can't use it because of turf. So there's a lot of things. There's a lot of factors in there. By and large, I always tell people when a book will come out and they say, yeah, your race is in there. Yeah, but it's a sub. doesn't mean anything. If it fills on that day, chances are there's going to be a race, and then it doesn't, it's going to go. So, I mean, if it's in there, I don't care if it's a sub, if it's not a sub. I think Dave feels the same way. We're going to try and put the best card together every day, whether it's a with race in a book, whether it's a sub, or whether it's an extra. But I will say, I think compared to a lot of the places in the country, when we look at the overnight, I think we make a higher percentage of races in the book than most people. We do kind of pride ourselves in saying, hey, you know, we know what the horses are and do. And, you know, not every day the book goes. But, you know, frequently, you know, we call one or two off and we use an extra or two. But, you know, unless there's a race that has, you know, a certain type of horse that just has to go because the stakes coming up, we're pretty much open to whatever looks good. And on another note, we have to watch the purse account too as well. Just because, you know, a race looks good, if we have, you know, three allowance races good and it kind of puts us over our average for the day, it's like, maybe we shouldn't do that. So there's so many factors involved that it's not as easy as it sounds, but we're basically looking to put the best card together for that day, whether the race is in the book, a sub, or an extra.
Right, just to follow up, like, we'll get owners that'll sometimes be upset and their particular race is a sub for that day. And I think a lot of times, you know, we're writing these books a week, 2 weeks before. We may have an allowance race, for example, that we think we have a set of six horses and maybe one gets hurt, one gets sick, and ultimately the sub ends up filling instead. So it's not an exact science. You put preference into filling the book, and you like to have a spot for owners to point towards, you know, especially beginning of Santa Anita, beginning of Del Mar, just so owners can count on, look, I have a race opening day at Santa Anita, opening day at Del Mar. So you definitely do emphasize filling the book, but again, at times you need subs and extras, and primarily those races were book races before. They're not just, you know, races coming out of the clouds typically, or they could be a request that an owner would have. And we try to, as long as it doesn't conflict with what other races we have in the book, we like to maybe give a race a shot that maybe we might think might have a 30% chance of going, but sometimes it may fill. So definitely not an exact science.
I think you will see, following up on David again, is I think you'll see that the races on the weekends, the races in the book, I think, fill at a much higher percentage than necessarily the races during the week. We know the good races, the races that are going to get more horses. Obviously, Saturday is our biggest day anywhere. So I think if you look back, you'll see that the races that we put on Saturdays go, the book is good more often on a Saturday than another day, and that's just because we kind of cherry pick a little bit and put the races we know are going to feel good on that day, because that's the day people are out and they're betting more. Where on a Wednesday or a Thursday, you know, we might put an allowance race in the book. We kind of know probably won't go. We have to offer it. So I would say you would see more book races off during the week than you will on the weekends, because, like I said, those are the most important days to garner our handle.
Rick, I've got an online question here from Bruce on something you just said. How do you know there's a race for just about every horse in the backside in two condition books? Could you talk a little bit about how your staff puts the condition book together and the process that you use to make sure that you've got races covered?
Well, when I say that, I'm in for the categories. So, in other words, you know, there's maiden races, maiden specials. Let's just start with the maiden specials. There's short dirt, long dirt. Short turf, long turf, and then fillies and boys for each division, okay? Maybe all those races don't fit into the first book. So we want to take care of the maiden category. Then we go to the allowance categories. Once again, once other than short dirt, once other than long dirt. So those type of categories. When I talk about the basic once other than, twice other than, the maiden races, then we'll sit back and do the maiden claimers, make sure they get in there. Starter allowance races, we'll put them in there, you know, boys, girls, short, long. And I'd say two books, and majority, they all aren't going to fit in there. But I think the trainers kind of know our pattern at this point, and they'll know, oh, it's not here. I know it'll be here. I know it was a mile next time. It'll be a mile and a quarter next time. It'll be a mile and an eighth, or if it was short, it'll be long. So we just have a feel that within that month or 5 weeks, you know, it's our kind of responsibility to make sure that just about everybody's got a chance to run. Now, there's always a horse or two or three that fit into just a category that is tough to fill, and that's why we are very open for trainers and owners themselves to request races. There might be a couple of things that you know, fall off the radar or I either don't think about that aren't in the general categories that we do. And I welcome anybody and everybody to bring in, you know, lists or call me about horses. I've got a folder here that I keep for the whole meet. And everyone, they kind of know when I'm every other Monday or every two Mondays when I work on the book and I get requests. And generally those requests are for races that are little have a little twist to them, and I welcome that because you can't think about everything. And then there's horses coming off layoffs. I mean, I don't know that you had a horse. How do I know you have a horse coming off a layoff of 6 months that's ready to run next week unless you tell me? So very comfortable, and I think most of the guys here know they're very comfortable to come in and say, hey, that my horse is getting ready off a layoff. Can we, you know, put it in there? And, if it fits, we'll do it. And so a lot of communication back and forth. This thing isn't done in a vacuum. Trainers are always wheeling through here. Hey, what about this? What about that? You know, jotting stuff down. So every effort is made to get something in there to get a horse to run. And once again, you know, most guys get it. You're not going to get the perfect race, maybe. You're looking for a 12.5 3/4 and a 16, 6.5 comes in there. I mean, you know, you got to be a little flexible, and a lot of people are. But that's how we try and get it done within that that 2 weeks, two-book span.
Rick, this time of the year, April, we're starting to have both straight three-year-old races and three-and-up races. How do you, as racing secretary, decide which races might be written as a straight three-year-old and which races you're going to write as a three-and-up?
Yeah, you know, that's a tricky thing. We used to end Santa Anita here about now, really. You used to end in mid-April, and I didn't have to worry about that because they went to Hollywood Park. So it's been about, this is the fourth year here, and I try and I kind of see how other states do it and you know, when they go to the three and up, and I'm always, you know, whenever you do it, you always hear about it. But there comes a time when you can see that you just know that the three-year-old category is a little weak on its own. The older category is a little weak on its own, so you have to combine them. A perfect example is I decided to put a three and up maiden race on the turf going long. There was three and up, first time. I think we're running it. We might have ran it yesterday. And I got, oh man, I'll get a split. Guess what? We got nine horses. So the category wouldn't have gone older, and it wouldn't have gone three-year-old. So by putting it together, we ended up making it. Some of the cowbred races, there's just not enough to consistently make it go. So you have to put them together. I mean, it's good and bad. It's good in the fact that theoretically have more horses. On the other hand, it's one less race that we have to write, and that sometimes hurts when we lose the number of races we can write. Instead of writing three-year-olds and three and up and three-year-old fillies and three and up, we go from four races to two, so we have to come up with two more races to write. But it's kind of a feel type of thing. You'll notice not all categories are there yet. I usually start with the starter allowance races and go from there because it's a good test, and we do keep stats on that. And by and large, the first 10 races that are run three and up, the three-year-olds do win more, so we always like to show people that. When you think about it, I mean, let's take a maiden race or even a starter allowance race. If you're a three-year-old, I think you want to run against 4 and 5 year olds that are still eligible for that condition. You know what I mean? At this time of the year, a lot of times the 3 year olds are better than the older horses. So it's just a feel. It's a time. Sometimes they end up doing it too soon, and you know, I hear about it and I'll notice it and I back off, and so it's more of a feel than anything else. But I think from here on out, the next book starts May, I think May 3rd. They'll pretty much all be 3 and up. And also, what helps is at that time, the same time the 2-year-old races come in. So that fills up a couple of the races that might go away because of the 3 and up situation.
Thanks, Rick. David, could you explain what the Encompass horse management system is and how you might use that to help check on your horse population and see what horses you might have for a specific category?
Right. So for those that don't know, Encompass is our database system through the Jockey Club. It keeps all records of every thoroughbred that runs nationally, internationally. What we use it for, when horses enter our property, we know they're grouped by particular trainer. So a particular trainer's horses are inputted into Encompass so we can see what horses each individual trainer has. It keeps track of workouts, and it's the system that we use to produce our overnight and our program. And throughout the years, it's grown to where more information is available, where we could group horses for certain categories. So it gives us an idea when we're putting together the condition book, when we're going into a race meet, what particular categories we're strong in. You know, it separates it that way. So it's a more data at our disposal. However, one of the misconceptions can be is sometimes a 20 claimer at Santa Anita in April might be a 8 claimer in July at Del Mar. So horses do shift through different levels. But again, Encompass is valuable, and it's what we use to produce our overnight and program, and it's the main database that every racing office uses in the country.
Thanks, David. Moving on, could you go over a few of the positions your staff in the racing office that most owners should be familiar with, such as the clerk of the course, the stakes coordinator, and the horseman's liaison?
Right. So, and again, owners are encouraged to contact our office at any time with any questions. The primary role of the clerk of the course is to ensure that the ownership is listed correctly on the program that matches the full papers. Many owners will come in to discuss with the clerk of course, how a particular horse's ownership should read, bills of sales, all that type of thing goes through the clerk of the course. And again, owners are always encouraged to contact us, and I'm sure many owners on this call have probably had dealings with the clerk of the course before. Our stakes coordinator, again, reaches out to owners that nominate to stakes races to give the connections of those horses a rundown of what horses he expects will be in that particular stakes race. Gathers the nominations together, produces the nomination sheets that you see in the racing office. And then the horseman's liaison, again, is for Del Mar, located in the front side racing office, that just any needs that horsemen have in terms of seating, anything like that, they're encouraged to see our horseman's liaison that'll help with any of those questions as far as coming to the races and ensuring that they have, proper seating and anything that they need.
Thanks. And we're lucky enough to have a lot of the same staff members at Santa Anita and Del Mar. For those of you who may not know, Chris Murs is the stakes coordinator for both tracks. Janine Sahadi, I believe, is your horseman's liaison down at Del Mar.
Right, and Sandy King, right.
And, Rick, you have a couple additional staff members here at Santa Anita?
Yeah. Like I said, Chris works here as well. Angel does our clerk of the course work here, and Amy Atkinson. I think everybody knows her. If anybody has any needs for just about anything, she can do that. And you didn't mention the paymaster, which is probably the most important important person you want to know as an owner at the racetrack. And Bridget Crawford works at both places too, so that it works out well. It's a lot of familiarity, and all these people are we're happy to fulfill just about any request you can ask for.
All right, and if anyone on the phone has any questions that they'd like to ask at the end of the program, this would be a good time to press *3 on your phone and get registered to ask a question. And I'd like to talk a little bit about what the role of the TOC is with working with the racing secretaries. Rick and David's job is, as you've heard, to handle the day-to-day operations and to have a racing program that really works for their individual meets. The TOC's job is to work with all of the thoroughbred and fair tracks on a larger scale to make sure that the California racing program as a whole is well-balanced and healthy, and to make sure that we have consistency from meet to meet. So we work with all the racing secretaries at the beginning of every race meet to go over what the purse levels are going to be and the stakes schedule. And we like to look at how those purses and stakes at one meet are going to affect the next meet. For example, this year we did a comprehensive review of all of the stakes scheduled in Southern California, and working with Rick Hammerly, we added several new opportunities for three-year-olds on the turf, since we agreed that there was a time of the year where there weren't really a lot of races for those horses. We also moved a stakes race at Santa Anita earlier in the meet because over time it had gotten closer and closer to the Los Alamitos Derby, and we felt it was affecting the field size of both races. So that was a change that the TOC was able to facilitate because we weren't just looking at Santa Anita or just looking at Los Al, but looking at how the two meets affected each other. We are very lucky in California to have great staff in the racing offices that work together, collaborate. Rick and David talk often. We've had a lot of great meetings with all the racing secretaries, including Bob Moreno over at Los Alamitos. And I think everyone should be congratulated on how well we do work together.
Well, I was going to say thanks, Liz, and like a lot of things in this world, what best works is when we communicate, and I will honestly say that many years ago, the relationship between the racing offices and the TOC was tentative at best, but we've kind of chipped away year in and year out, and the good thing is, we need to feel comfortable calling each other up when we have situations, and as Liz just said, when we mentioned the stakes, we sit down a couple times a year and are able to, discuss purses, where we think the purses should go. We don't always agree, but the fact is that we do get together and we feel that we can talk freely. So, I thank Greg and Liz especially for that opportunity, and we want to make it known that your outlet is a TOC, but myself and David, I'm speaking for David, but we welcome any owner at any time to come in the office if he has a question and wants to know about just about anything that we do. You're the main cog that drives our game, so you should be informed. So please, those that are listening and those that you can pass the word on to, don't be afraid. Come on in. We'll explain what we're doing. So it's really, I think, come a long way over the last decade for sure, the communication between us.
Right. I definitely want to follow up on those sentiments as well. Communication is key. In our industry these days, we all need to be on the same page, and we're all trying to make the game better. And, the fact that anything that we're looking to propose, everything's communicated clearly, and like Rick alluded to, we're open to new ideas. And again, any owner that wants to, speak with us about something that they think would work in the future, we're open to that for sure. But again, just being on the same page and communicating, we may not always agree, but, just working things out as an industry together definitely works better.
Absolutely. And we do have some space in the queue if anybody on the phone wants to register for questions. We are going to have time to take several in just a couple of minutes. I also just wanted to talk about, who is the TOC, who is the Board of Directors, and all TOC members are elected owners and trainers. It's a very diverse board. We've got owners, traders, and breeders competing in Northern California, Southern California at all levels, in stakes races and claiming races. And our board represents a very diverse cross-section of owners. And that's very important when we're working with the racing office to make sure that we have a well-balanced program that has something for everyone in California. We try to make sure that we're not focusing too much on any one category of races and that there really is something for everyone. And anyone hopefully will leave this call feeling like they can call Rick or directly, Rick or David directly if they have any questions, which they've mentioned. But TOC staff is also always available if you have a question that you would rather ask us. If we don't know the answer, we absolutely will find it out for you and can also act as a liaison between the racing office. That's what we're here for. So, and again, we've got room for any questions online and on the phone. And I've got one for you here, David, on actually for both of you. Can Santa Anita considering offering the Place All Bet as does Del Mar? Maybe you could talk a little bit about how the bets that you offer are determined by the different racetracks, and there are some differences between what's offered at Del Mar and Santa Anita and why that might be.
Sure. The Place All Bet is on the table. I think you've seen here, we with the addition of the late pick five, which has turned out to be a winner, I think we added the parlay bet here. We are open to just about anything in this new world. The betting format out there has kind of got a little blah, I'll admit. Then all of a sudden, you know, Gulfstream came up with the Rainbow Six, and what they have last week, they put 20 million bet into it. So we might be looking at some bet like that. But we are open to, like Liz said, you know, there's more bets out there that somebody knows about or hasn't thought about yet. So always looking to change the menu, try to keep it a little fresh. You know, Del Mar both, and Santa Anita is now doing the jackpot pick six, which I think has shown when the jackpot gets up there, you know, people chase it. So we're looking for anything. And I agree. I like the place picks, the place pick all. So it's on the table. In fact, we talked about some bets the other day, and someone brought that up. So it's definitely on the table.
No, definitely. I think we alluded to it earlier, where the pick six in California was the main bet, and now the late pick four. So it's just this ever-changing, you know, wagering platform here, where I think anything's on the table for sure. And the jackpot pick six. Now I believe we're year two into that. So again, always looking for new and creative wagering options.
Thanks, David. Here's another question about allowance races, a straight allowance race. How do you balance offering straight allowance races with offering stakes races?
Go ahead, Dave. Right. So classified allowance races, which I'm assuming they're referring to, again, you don't want to interfere, especially in some of our stakes levels, specifically on the dirt, you don't want to offer an allowance race that'll jeopardize your stakes race filling. So a lot of times you'll offer a classified allowance race if there's a gap in a particular category to serve as a prep, a local prep for some horses to, you know, run there and then run in a stakes race that you have later in the meet. But again, that's just knowing your inventory, knowing your population. And you know, in some levels, if you think there's another set of horses that may be a notch below some of your stakes quality, and if you feel confident that you could fill a particular race like that, then you would offer that race. It just seems lately, what I've noticed the last couple of years, especially the dirt sprinters and dirt horses going long, it's just been challenging to fill allowance races and stakes.
Well, Liz is probably smiling because myself, I think we have way too many stakes. And the problem with riding allowance races is we got a stake every 5 weeks. So it's hard to ride an allowance race that might take away from the stake. On the other hand, We have a situation here in Southern California, especially in the longer meet. David's a little bit more handcuffed than I would be if we had less stakes. I would love to write more allowance races as preps for stakes to let those horses not necessarily run in against the heavy heads as soon as they do. So we knocked a few stakes off the calendar this year. I still believe we have way too many stakes for certain categories. I would rather have less stakes worth more money and fill those gaps in with the allowance races you're talking about to give those horses a little stepladder to get up to the stake level. So it's all about timing and if there's a spot to do it.
Thanks, Rick. Rick, do you have an update on how the two new conditions are doing that Santa Anita introduced this year, the horses that have been purchased for $100,000 or less and the races for smaller barns?
Yeah, mixed results. Excuse me. For some reason or another, we have not had as many three-year-old maidens, both colts and fillies, for the dirt as we've had in the past. So as it turned out, we kind of just split the category in half. So we've been riding a lot. When we did those, those would go with five or six, and then that took away from the open category. Those were going with, six or seven. So I think it worked. I think we found out we started out with the homebred clause in there, and, we found out that a lot of the homebreds are winning those, so we took that clause off. And then I went a couple of weeks without it because we had a couple of big days we were trying to, make some races on it, and it kind of worked when you had to combine them. There's a couple in this book. There's a colt race and a filly race coming up next week, and I've actually had more people come up to me and said, hey, can you, is that going to go? Can you open it up? And blah, blah, blah. So it's mixed. I mean, I get the feeling, everyone kind of gets the idea what we're trying to do, so maybe there's a, there might be a better way to try and do that, but once again, like I said, we're trying different stuff here, and people appreciate that, and we'll look at the results and see if there's maybe another way to tweak it. We like the idea, and like I said, maybe there's another way to go about it. So it's been successful on one hand, and maybe not so much on the other.
Great, thanks, Rick. I have a question here from Ginny on being new to the thoroughbred racing world, and how do you even start to get familiar with all of the terminology? I know for many of us that, talk about condition books and sub-races every day, it becomes like a second nature to us. So I wanted to touch on a few of the resources that are available through the TOC at our offices in either Northern or Southern California. You can get a copy of our new owner handbook. We also have a new owner seminar that will cover a lot of basics coming up at Del Mar on, we have a new owner seminar coming up on May 12th. And additionally, staff is always available to answer questions. There's no question too silly or too small if we're helping new owners get involved and better understand and better enjoy horse racing. And we have two clinics coming up, one on May 12th and one on July 22nd. So there's ongoing educational opportunities available through the TOC throughout the year, in addition to the resources that we have in the office.
And also, participate as much as you can. Come to the track. Be around. Talk to your trainer. And, you can hear some live uses of the vernacular that goes around at the racetrack. But being involved is usually the best way to learn, I feel.
That's great advice, and I think with that advice, Rick, we're going to call it a morning. Again, if you have any follow-up questions or if we weren't able to get to your question, feel free to call the TOC office. And thanks to everyone for listening, and thanks especially to our participants, Rick Hammerly and David Jerkins.
Well, thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you.
And just a reminder, if you'd like to listen again, the live recording of the call will be available on toconline.com. Have a good day, everybody.